Welcome to a special episode of a podcast here. My name is Adam Wolf, along with my co-host Jessica Carlin and Nick Studholm. Welcome back, Nick. It's been a while since we've done any podcasts together.
I know. Great to see you guys.
It is great to see you. I don't even think I've seen you like on Zoom very much. We haven't really been over the phone when we
talk. No. COVID drinks on Zoom just aren't, you know, it's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's popular though.
Absolutely.
So I'm excited about this podcast. As I said, it's been sort of a while and we both, our lives have been quite busy over the past couple of years that you and I have done a podcast. And this sort of actually serves as an official transition. You and I have done some conversations periodically when we posted. So you're going to kind of hand over the podcast a little and we're going to continue as the Movement Guild podcast, which is, a guild is an association of like-minded professionals, and you will definitely be involved in it, but we're going to sort of take it over. And so this is the official transition here. And so I wanted to serve sort of A, as a notification, B, it makes my life a lot easier because then I can just type some things into stuff that already exists and change the name and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
But also just wanted to keep it. And then we're just going to keep going. So
absolutely.
It's good to see you. What have you been up to over the past couple of years? I know one of the things, I know you're always learning stuff. So I wanted to specifically, I figured it would be, we could talk about a couple of things, but what are you up to in your business and in your learnings abroad right now? You've done a lot of different things over the past couple of years.
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, that is the sort of the problem is there's a lot of, it's kind of like eating from a buffet table. There's so many interesting things to go do, right? And then how do you bring them back and integrate them? So I think the two or three things that have been most interesting were a lot of the vestibular stuff that we did with Dr. Traster, and then the Moxie sensors and the breathing work has been probably where I've put the most energy in the last couple of years.
And so you've been working, I know, I want you to tell us sort of what Moxie is and how it works in terms of some of the breathing that you're doing as well. And then I guess more importantly, because Justin and I talk a lot about breathing and like, how are you integrating it into your practice in a way that people can use it and take home?
Yeah. And, you know, look, COVID has really created an issue here because obviously breath training as a class or a technique or in office is a lot more challenging, if you will. And it's sort of a counterintuitive thing because it could probably be actually quite helpful for certain demographics as well. And in fact, I've only seen two post-COVID sort of long haulers who have the post-viral symptoms, but the breathing work has been really powerful in bringing them back. So the first thing to say is I wouldn't, an obvious statement, but wouldn't deem myself to be an expert in breathing. I've read a lot of the books that, you know, I think are out there that most people have come across. But I think the difference in our approach, and heavily influenced by a guy by the name of Brian Kozak, but using a Spiro Tiger, which is kind of like the ability to use a dumbbell for the diaphragm. So you're able to actually strengthen it in a meaningful way, which is different, I think, than learning to breathe, good breathing mechanics. And I think you can do some strengthening with just breath work and working out. But at some point, you can't change the resistive force of breathing in or out. So the Spiro Tiger lends to that. So I think that's one of the main differences in what we've been trying to do. And unfortunately, just as we were sort of getting those classes going, COVID hit. So we still do a fair bit of training, but it's either on a one-on-one or isolated basis at this point as it relates to that.
So what is Moxie and what is a Spiro Tiger?
Yeah, well, so the Moxie is, I mean, they go hand in hand in my mind because the Moxie measures oxygen and a relative hemoglobin value, a percent oxygen and relative hemoglobin value at the muscle level, as the, you're sort of going from an arterial to a venous capillary. So it gives you a sense of how much oxygen is at that moment in the muscle or being delivered or being utilized.
So it's a sensor you're putting on the skin. Correct.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. They look like little matchboxes and you can put them, buy as many as you want and put them anywhere on the body. We tend to use the lower body for a lot of our stuff, but you can put them up or lower, left, right, et cetera. And we can talk about, you know, the kind of things we're looking for, but the reason it's interesting is because at some point delivering oxygen is a function of the ability to breathe properly, right? And so the Spirotagger then becomes a tool whereby which we can train it. So the Spirotagger is a handheld device that you can hold, obviously, and add varying degrees of breathing bags, almost like a musician bag or something. So 1 liter, 2 liter, 3 liter, 4 liter, et cetera, to be able to create a resistive force. But what it allows that's really neat is it has feedback for coordination of breath and how much breath you're moving. So if you were, for example, trying to just control a 3 liter bag breathing in and out, the machine is telling you whether you're actually inhaling and exhaling that amount of air. So either you're under or over inhaling. And so we don't think a lot about our coordination of breath, but as we start to be more physically active, coordination of breathing is everything, because as you well know, the first thing to give in coordination and any physical activity is breath, right? I mean, that's the, your legs don't suddenly give out and then you have a hard time breathing, right? Or it's that your breathing breaks down, and most people, they increase their respiratory frequency, so the number of breaths in a minute, and they breathe in a more shallow way, so they have less tidal volume, right? That would be the compensation that you immediately see. So if we can train somebody to keep their respiratory frequency at a certain frequency, but they're, if it goes up, but they can still have a similar tidal volume or move a similar amount of air, then we're changing that coordination of breath. And so the Spirotagger allows us to do a lot of variations of training. And then the MOXIe helps us understand whether we're getting that adaptation real time at the muscle level.
I have a question. One is, what's the price tag for this whole kit and caboodle? And is this something that people only test can do in your facility, or is this something you can send people home with? You're like, practice
it's a good question. I mean, so there are two different companies, MOXIe. It's called NIRS, Near Infrared Spectrometry. And there's a couple companies out there, but MOXIe is probably the most well-priced for the standardization and technique. And I think, you know, they have bundles of sensors, but a sensor might be $800. And for people who are, let's say, a triathlete or a runner or something, it does link to a Garmin. So once you establish zones, you could easily create a training impact with somebody by having a MOXIe on and saying, okay, we want you to, when you see your tissue oxygen reach this level, we want you to do an effort at this intensity or pull back. So it is something that for the diehard, and there are lots of them out there, so the call them they're not even weekend warriors, they're more than that, but they are the people who can afford the equipment and race the triathlons and things, but maybe aren't pros, right? This kind of equipment is quite valuable to them. The Spirotagger is pretty expensive. I mean, the units are about $1,000. But there are some people hopefully in January coming out with a US-based version called an InX, and price has not been announced, but it'll probably be about half the price and much more durable. And as sales ramp up, they can reduce price on manufacturing costs when they're, so hopefully that will make that more attainable. So we have
So what do you give to us peasants that want to do it, but can't, have.
Right.
Can we just use a balloon?
Well, you know, look, I mean, there's lots of ways, but at some point you can't, the tool is the tool for that level of athlete, right?
That I'm asking, let's say like for the person that comes in, Nick, and you're totally working on these things in the clinic and they're not going to buy the equipment. My question to you is, what are some of the things that you send home for them? Totally. Like, are you giving them breathing exercises? Is it an app you're looking at? Is it, you know?
So a lot of,
I know it's not yoga.
No, it's not. It's definitely not yoga.
Just because Nick's
it's partially because the part of the deal with yoga is that, you know, I'm probably as passionate about soccer, but for whatever reason, people who get into yoga can't help but tell you all about it, right? And show you moves, and I'm never like, hey, you know, what you need to do is sit down and watch this soccer, right? So it's sort of that kind of a thing. But so we do a lot of nasal breathing techniques, right? So if people, pulse oxes are pretty inexpensive. And so you could actually do some breathing techniques with a pulse ox. You can do nasal breathing techniques where you're you know, having them walk or run or doing a variety of efforts where they recover with nasal breathing or where they nasal breathe throughout the entirety of it. We use Power Breathe, and Power Breathe makes a couple handheld devices on Amazon. I think they range probably from $30 to maybe $40 to $80, depending on the difficulty. And there's a ton of good research they have on two breaths 30 times a day, changing the strength. And they've published some really cool research with that. There's something I just ordered from Philips that hasn't arrived yet. I'll let you know how it is, about $25. And it's, again, an inspiration, expiration, resistance device. And so just trying to figure out ways to discover something that we can create some sort of resistance while we're breathing, right? And all of those are relatively cost effective for patients, and they're willing to do it. The problem is a lot of them don't ultimately create a coordination issue. And, you know, from obviously you're interested in neuro, et cetera, with the cerebellum, et cetera, that, you know, having the ability to coordinate things becomes pretty cool. Absolutely. And having that feedback. But those are the things we try to use.
Excellent. What's your next question?
I'm curious what your thoughts are on, you said earlier, COVID kind of threw, my words, wrench in the operation, yeah, but with people wearing face masks a lot during the day, do you feel like that there might be some, other than it just being kind of annoying, yeah, there might be any repercussions from like a pH perspective or from any mouth breathing all day long?
It's an interesting one. I mean, the reality is what I've seen from a research standpoint is it doesn't really change. Like if you're wearing a pulse ox, it doesn't change anything. So what you have to realize is a pulse ox is measuring your arterial blood all the time. So it should be heavily saturated. So you're generally going to see a high value there. I have not put a moxie on and walked around for a while and tried to understand what happens at the level of the muscle, because that's a different saturation of oxygen than at an arterial level. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, there's a percentage, it's probably lower than, and I'd say this just based on opinion, not on fact, right? But reading these books, I mean, you'd read the Oxygen Advantage or Nestor's book, and you'd be led to believe that everyone's hypocapnic and everyone overbreathes. And, you know, and that's just not true. A percentage of people absolutely do. So I think if you can get people to nasal breathe with a mask on, I think you actually maybe might be doing a bit of a service for this group, because the CO2 tolerance is not a bad thing, right? And we know that, for example, like in high anxiety or stress or coming back from brain injuries or these kind of things, that the amygdala is very CO2 intolerant. It always is. So we know that, you know how it feels when you're suffocating, that immediacy of needing to take a breath. I mean, it's survival, right? But if those chemoreceptors are actually altered and you get slightly hypocapnic, or you put a mask on and you're rebreathing a bit of your own air, you can a little bit decrease in oxygen, if you will, your pulse ox drops. You could imagine how that could create some anxiety for people, because it's immediately firing into that amygdala that isn't very, very chemosensitive, right? So there's a possibility that if you could get people more tolerant. So the long-winded answer is I don't think it actually is dropping people's pulse ox at all. I think that's been well established. But I think if you could get people to nasal breathe, you might actually be able to take advantage of an opportunity where they have to focus a lot more into their breathing while they're on. Although, masks suck. I mean, we all, they may have value, but they suck to wear. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, we don't have to wear them here exercising. I don't know about you guys.
Not exercising. Trainers are supposed to wear them.
Right. So inside.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we're wearing them when we can. Outside. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We do a lot of hypoxic breathing.
That was my next question. A little bit about like the hypoxic breathing and things that you're working on.
Well, anecdotally, I say it always feels harder after a day of wearing a mask. There's no doubt. It's like we've already been living there, even though I just told you that we're probably not. So again, this is really stuff that was turned on to by Brian Kozak and that group, who actually was one of the first guys working in and around with the Moxies and the Spiral Tigers. And he's not an easy guy to find online.
I found him though. Next level SP.ca.
Yeah. So works mostly in hockey, but also consulting, et cetera. But the idea is just like anything else. He does yoga though, Nick. I know we've talked a lot about it.
Yeah,
absolutely. And true to, you know, he meditates. I mean, he's the whole thing actually. So basically the neat part about the Spiral Tiger is you can do this any number of ways, but you can rebreathe your own air, right? You have the bag going, you just don't exchange fresh air. You have a pulse ox on, you breathe yourself down to about a certain, maybe 90% or so on your oxygen. And then you try to just keep yourself there as you are taking fresh breaths of air occasionally through the Spiral Tiger to just to live in that sweet spot. It's for me, and I know Sam, my athletic trainer, it's pretty uncomfortable. Some people don't find it as uncomfortable. And we do bouts of this, and there's some just interesting research on it's sort of the equivalent of, or an equivalent of high altitude training for the brain and lungs. So you will probably get an EPO boost the next day, or a small one, right? But in addition, there's some recovery benefits to it. Some anti-inflammatory benefits. Anytime you go hypoxic, in theory, you're going to create some mitochondria and vascularity. So there are other neat benefits to doing it, as long as you make sure you don't go too hypoxic or too long for the brain.
What are the effects that you feel anecdotally? Like after you do it?
Well, I mean, feel great after. So we link it with a training afterward, but generally feel really good.
So you have people do the breathing first the next and then they go train.
Right. Okay. We actually do the hypoxic breathing and then, and again, based on the influence of Brian Kozak, but then we do some core breathing. So everything that day would be an attempt to create a respiratory acidosis. So all the breathing is going to make you hypoxic. So you might be planking on a gym ball while you're doing your breathing. So the idea is you're trying to keep yourself in that state, but not quite at such a low level. And you get a pretty interesting boost. And so the next day generally is quite a good workout day because you've decreased that inflammation. You've drawn some water out of the cells for sure. You definitely are becoming more tolerant of CO2. So again, in any exercise that you're doing, you're less likely to start to panic when the breath starts to shorten. You're less likely to change your rhythm of breathing or the timing. Is that right? Because you've now, you're gaining some comfort with that and changing those chemoreceptors.
Yeah.
So absolutely. So it's been a really interesting thing to add and sort of mixed love around it, if you will. Right. And you can hook up Amoxy and watch your tissue oxygen drop real time. So the neat part is you can actually create, through breathing, you can create these systemic effects. So if you wanted to change how somebody utilizes one strategy, if they don't utilize oxygen as well as you'd want them to, so they have it available, but the muscle is not uptaking it as well as you want, you might use hypoxic breathing as a strategy. And so now you can create these cardiorespiratory strategies for people in early rehab who might not be able to do the physical activity that you'd like to drive.
And are you using this with like everyone? Are you using it with specific populations? I know you work a lot with like endurance sports, so I could see like the direct application. I mean, I guess particularly with everybody, you think about the diaphragm and low back pain and the diaphragm and just endurance for, you know, some of these traffic.
So the challenge is, you know, if you came into the office and the first thing I said is, you know, we did make sure that you need to
breathe better. Yeah.
Your vestibular system is good and that you breathe better, right? And you're crying. It's a hard sell. Right. Yeah. Unfortunately. And yet, it's center, right? I mean, it's like one or two, right?
You got to sneak it in though sometimes. Huh?
So we usually use the Power Breathe. I test the Power Breathe on everybody. So the Power Breathe, the more expensive ones allow you to do a inspiration test to see where somebody is. And I don't think I've ever had, an injured person come in and have a better than a fair. And most of them are poor or very poor. So then we start to talk about stiffness and creating, I mean, you know, we talk about so much about chasing joint movement, but if you could have stability proximally, if you will, you'll theoretically be able to have better mobility distally. as well as you'll have more strength. And then you've got this metaboboro reflex, which is you'll shunt blood to your diaphragm to preserve breathing over anything away from muscles of locomotion. So you could make all sorts of arguments around why breathing is foundational, right? So we try to get everybody at least nasal breathing. The challenge with the Spiro is a mask has to come off, right?
Yeah.
And now you got to start breathing. And so it sort of creates a hindrance. The other challenge with it is you'd be surprised, but coordinating your breathing is kind of hard for a lot of people.
What coordinating your breathing means. Like, what does that mean to you? Because it's a term that I've recently heard a little bit more in.
Well, it's not hard if you're doing like a resonant breathing or something where it's just four in, hold, six out, or, you know, you just time that. And we talked about the breathing app, right? That I think is that Brett Jarrow has turned me on to, that works great for that. But the idea is on the Spiro Tiger, you can set a breath frequency rate, right? So let's pretend I just had you breathe for a minute with the Spiro Tiger, and the only thing I had turned on was just breathing for a minute and let's say a bag size, because you're breathing a 2.5 liter bag. And what we get to see is your respiratory frequency, let's say, is 22 breaths in that, doing that. So now we can set it to 22 breaths or 24 breaths or 16, whatever, and it will beep like a metronome, and you have to breathe at that rhythm.
Got it.
So you've got to inhale and exhale to that rhythm. And so that becomes valuable, of course, as you start to do things at a faster pace, right? Any physical activity, you'll see there's a ventilatory threshold whereby people break down. And so that might be at 30 breaths or at 35 or 40. So you could even train people in that zone of the coordination of breathing. Or you might do an endurance day where you have somebody breathe for 10 or 15 straight minutes and you just set it to 22 breaths, and they're just having to maintain that coordination. And it's quite challenging over time because you're working the endurance, but you're also making sure that you're delivering the same amount of air in and out for that full 15 minutes, right? Mm. So it's neat. So that to me is the coordination, because again, we all know that everything is really about coordination, right? Coordinating the movement. So
I got a question for you. What is, you typically work with people, like what's a first session like for you? You're seeing, like, you're doing your evals over a couple sessions. I'm guessing you don't just get all the information. Yeah. Like, what do you have? I guess my question is more specifically, what have you deemed essential to get in on the first session? Like, obviously it's going to be different for everyone, and you're, and then so, what are you, and I sort of struggle with that too. Like, what do I need to get in the first session? What can I just like find out, you know? For some of it for me is like, oh, do you see how maybe this is different than this? And we don't touch on it in the first session. We'll come back to that in session two or three. And
dude, it's such a challenge. And I know you know that because there's so much you want to look at.
Yeah.
And the patient wants you to do something, right? And so the challenge, and you know, you want to take all day, but they don't necessarily have all day. And it's hard to charge for an all day assessment, right? I mean, easy to charge, hard to get paid maybe. It does not necessarily involve Moxie or Spiros unless somebody's coming in specifically for that, right? But if they have an injury at some point, and I'll get to the specifics, but if they have an injury at some point, I want to put a Moxie on. So if they've had an ACL or something.
So that's, I know you're cash. So that's just like another charge. Is that how you?
Correct. Yeah. But just because the blood flow to that leg might be different than the blood flow to the other as when you do an effort. And I want to see that at some point, because we may want to train that. Then that's down the road. But we always do, assuming they haven't had concussions or head injuries, or they're not coming in from an MVA or something, because we would do a vestibular exam at that point. We always do gait on everybody, walking, running, jumping if it makes sense. And we'll do balance on everybody. So I know you have a balance tracks, right?
Yeah.
We have a Forest platform, so, and our treadmill, so that gives it at least that data.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do just a quick motion assessment to correlate the gait findings to movement to determine whether the limited ankle dorsiflexion is really limited or whether it's just not used or it's weak, you know. And then we tend to do some strength testing. We most of the time test everybody's toe strength, calf strength. And beyond that, then usually screen a bunch of muscles from a muscle manual testing standpoint. Yeah. And try to then figure out if, let's say they came in with back pain, if we can treat some cranial nerves and give them an activation based on what we saw in gait. And that might be the quick homework. And then hopefully go over that the next visit, right?
Build from there. How?
Yeah.
Measuring calf strength by just how many calf raises they can do, like a tolerance?
Yeah, there's some good data on
20 is the number, if I recall, right?
Yeah. It actually is just age and gender specific. So there are charts. I mean, we try to get 25, and you want to use a metronome, and you want to have them do it to a 60 beat. So the beep, either I usually have them do the beep on the top, so it's up, 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 up type of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, very few people. So like if we see, so recently, for example, we saw somebody who had in gait, a really late phase toe off, right?
Okay.
So, you know, that could be due to lots of things, but we're immediately then led to assess that calf function. And what we found was, you know, she could do, I think, 7 calf raises on that side. So it the neat part is you can correlate the gait and the function.
Are you correlating, well, Nick? How are you? Are you eyeballing that late phase? Are you doing? Are you using Spark? Are you using? I know you have a number of different ways that you look at it. And
we use. So we have the Neuraxon, you know, 3D system.
Damn it, man,
so
I'm giving you like a self plug for yourself here, and you're not
totally. I know. Look,
take two.
The thing is, I would use Spark if I didn't have this system.
Yeah,
the system just speeds up the analysis, right?
Yeah, because you can put like sensors on, and you have a force platform and on the treadmill.
You get the real time data. Yeah. And so it, the thing is, you can see it in Spark because, you know, we've talked about it. But what's interesting is I'm using the same principle, which is when the opposite swing leg, so if I'm on my right leg and I'm swinging my left, when the left tibia is sort of parallel to the right tibia as it's swinging through, I want to start to see that calf come up. And so I'm also, because my sensors aren't going to tell me it's late, I'm just going to see more dorsiflexion on that side. So it's one of those things, I'm still using the same video visualization to say, oh, that looks,
and you got to look at it, and then that's where your knowledge comes in, because it's one thing to have the data, but it's another thing to be able to see
absolutely
the tibia, and if it's
absolutely,
you know, where it's coming from. Nice.
Do you guys do, I mean, do you, I know you obviously with all the Gary Gray background, et cetera, and stuff, do you still do gait? I mean, do you do all the gait tweaks and all that kind of thing?
I look at people walk now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I record, I use Spark a lot.
Appreciate that.
I mean, you know, so I love the app, and you know, plug for you if you won't do it. I look at everybody, cause I think it's easy to grab onto, and it's easy, like for most people, I try to like as much as possible as we grow our business. And I try to, you know, teach just a thought process. Like, it's a great thing to anchor to, a lot easier than some of the other techniques that I've seen, maybe, or thought process, keeping it generally speaking. I have a smirk on your face. If I can keep it as non-specific as possible for as long as possible, and I just globally see that somebody's not controlling mid stance, or somebody, you know,
absolutely,
lacks toe off, or has not enough hip extent or flexion, you know, whatever it works out to be, why not just look at that? Cause it's, in my opinion, way more reproducible versus, you know, some other thought process. So for me, that's just like, it's a quick, it's easy. It's more able to reproduce, and let's use a Gary Gray or a applied functional science thought process for our tweaks and teasing things out maybe a little bit. But
right,
I think for me, it's, I look at people walk, and, you know, I try to assess a lot of sensory information in that first session, and
right,
you know, whatever that works out to be, and, you know, vestibular obviously, and, you know, muscle testing and all that. But I just try to, where's the biggest bang for the buck? And a lot of times it's like just the glutes or the shoulder complex, and keep it really specific, like non-specific.
Well, I know, I mean, I feel like sometimes, you know, we can't help but rehash our thought processes when we get together and talk, right? I mean,
absolutely. Because,
but what I think people fail to realize is this, is, I mean, each of you and myself, I mean, we're very unique individuals. We're raised in whatever environments we're raised in. And so therefore we react to our environments the way we do, and we have our emotional thing, et cetera. But as human beings who are walking through this planet in gravity, we have a lot more similarities with each other than we don't, right?
Absolutely.
And I think sometimes we're led to believe that we just need to be as joint by joint specific with everybody as possible, when the reality is we all walk, we all have eyes in the front of our head, you know, we all experience gravity. You know, there are certain things that are constants. We have a brain, and the brain is generally laid out similarly with certain nuclei in the cerebellum where they are. I mean, right? So you can kind of say, like, if these capacities aren't there, then those are going to be high value to chase, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And so sometimes
what else is left over then?
Correct. And so sometimes I smile because people come in and there's a lot of what appear to be similar start places, and it's because people don't own that capacity. Right. And so although we would do something specific for, let's say, the plantar fasciitis, if you're lacking that midline stuff or the glute, we're still always chasing the glute, right? And so occasionally a husband and wife will say, well, they seem like the same thing you gave my wife for slightly different things. Like, well, yeah, you both lack that,
yep.
that capacity.
This is just
and,
where we start.
And it's sort of funny that, you know, it can't always be as specific. I mean, because it actually is specific to human beings, right? I mean, if I may, but, and that's sort of the humor of sometimes the techniques, I think, when we delve way into the specifics and those make sense in certain cases. Absolutely.
And it's important to understand it to be able to go there when you need it. And
absolutely.
Sometimes, most times you don't, if we're just going to ballpark.
People miss a lot of the basics, I think, right. You know, you sort of end up. So anyway, I'm digress, but back to why I think walking so profound, because you improve somebody's walk, they do that all the time. It's very reflexive. So even if you improve it, you're hopefully taking work away from the cortex maybe and let it do other things. So
that's something that I've been thinking a lot, and not to like change the subject, but you know, core stability, and some of the conversations we've had and just that I've had with other people that we're friendly with, is that idea of, you know, what's been taught is core stability, and even that, you know, integrated core stability, or getting it all, you know, top to bottom to top. But then what I really didn't conceptualize for a very long time was this idea of like reflexive stability, and you know, being able to create those reactions. And yeah, and let's keep it cognitive. And even if it's like reaching your hand over here or crunching or whatever it's going to be doing, you know, there's that like cognitive piece to it at some level to create a reaction versus, you know, positioning your feet and positioning your head in space and making you do something that just drives the reactions maybe that you're looking for, to have to, you know, catch yourself almost when you like lose that ability to maintain midline stability. That's been really a powerful tool, I guess. I hate that word. That powerful like add to my practice and thought to my practice as I'm like giving somebody things to do at home.
Well, I think, I mean, definitely in the neuro world, Brett Jarvis always says this, and you know, he's not the only one, I'm sure, but he's the one I talk to the most. So he's the one that I think has said it until I got it. But a lot of times if something is a reflexive system, then you may have to initially rehab it reflexively, right? And not volitionally. It doesn't mean you can't, but you may get a better result or vice versa, right? And I think sometimes we don't consider that, right? So with those systems. But it's hard because it gets into, as you know, a rabbit hole of difficulty of, you know, where are you spending time, you know?
And, yeah, absolutely.
So, but back to the core stuff. I mean, that, like, again, Cozy's, this is his EMG data with his mentor, but you know, they saw that the spiral tiger breathing gave four times the quotes core firing of any core exercise, you know. Mm. So if you think about improving the strength of the diaphragm and the benefits of that, and I think we still think about doing that through some basic stuff, but that's where I think, you know, there's a lot being left on the table there.
Sounds like that would be the best selling point for people that might be maybe turned off or weirded out by doing spiral tiger work. For like, still core strength is so fashionable. The word is so trendy still. So I'm like, hey, this will improve your core strength. Okay, I'm in.
Right. Maybe we'll just have you seen, like, just we'll have to put up pre and post oblique strengthening photos, right, of the musculature after diaphragmatic breathing.
Instant buy-in.
Exactly.
I have a question for you. When you introduce or you meet someone new and they ask you, what do you do? Do you introduce yourself as a chiropractor? Or
you know, that's a really good question. And the answer is, I guess it depends on the environment, but not typically how I start, because unfortunately, our profession has such a variety of scope. And I think you'll tend to find that you either love chiropractors or you hate them. I mean, that's sort of where people swear by them. I saved my life, or I went to one once and he hurt me and I'll never go back, right? And so I think I tend to err on the side of describing something about what we do. And then as it comes out, then I'll in conversation. So I mean, jokingly, you know, we put this on our website. You know, I'm happy with it. We'll see if we turn people off. But if you currently ask me what we do, our website says we fix shit, right? So if somebody asked me that, but we might help people who have chronic pain that unresolving and can't get it resolved in other places. And then we step back, and if they say, oh, that's neat, what, you know, that opens up the dialogue before you say I'm a chiropractor, because they wouldn't even know that I know about a knee or an ankle or a foot or whatever.
Because right? Well, you're saying like chiropractor, well, you know how like a traditional chiropractor does this, like an obsessed, you know, they do this and this. I do nothing of that. You know, so
you know, we work in a running store. Right. Absolutely. And I don't want to say that either, because it's not, it's like what your value system is and what you want to do. We work in a running store, and people will come downstairs occasionally and they want to see a chiropractor. And so they'll say, I'd like to make it a visit. And there's three of us down there, and occasionally I'm the only one down there, so I'm the one they're talking to. And, you know, the very next question is, how much does it cost? And we're on the high end of things, but we deliver probably more value, I would think we do. And so we say a cost, and they're already disinterested. And I think, wait a minute, what if you could get a lifetime of result from something we do, but you're not even interested to hear because you've already made up your mind about the value I offer based on your previous experiences, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's why, unfortunately, so it's a great question. Why do you ask that question? I mean, do you find that's been your perception as well?
I think that it came about because I've asked that question. You're not the first one
I've
asked that question. Yeah. And mainly because most of the people we know do a lot of different things. And so you have a degree, right? Your licensure is chiropractic.
Absolutely.
Or anything with Adam's physical therapy, but you're not a traditional, what I would consider a traditional middle of the road, no offense to anyone, kind of practitioner. So I just wonder how you articulate that. Do you just cut it short and you're like, chiropractic, that's what people know, or do you go the long way? I remember we asked that to someone and they just kind of went on and on. They didn't actually have an answer.
I tried to try to
say something.
So I mean, jokingly, probably at this point say I fix shit, and that would open up, make somebody laugh, and then say, but we used to say like, you know, we specialize in rehabbing and helping people with chronic injuries get back to the stuff they love doing. And then that's it, right? So then people always say, oh, my knee hurts. I used to be able to run. I can't. What do you know? And then ultimately, usually it then comes out, oh, what do you do? And after I've hopefully established some value in conversation. So I've had to, but it's an interesting question and unfortunate about our profession. And, you know, to this day, I know Adam, I joke about it, and Stu and others, it's like, you know, we get along great, but the professional relationships between chiros, PTs and orthos, I mean, it's just, everybody's out for the same piece of pie and we're all throwing each other under the bus. You know?
Yes.
And we have some whack jobs in our profession. There's no doubt about it, you know? So...
Absolutely. Both sides of the
coin. Well, in any industry, there's some kooky people.
So having to wrap it up here, it's been a lot of fun. I'm glad we're able to do this.
Me too.
What's the beer you're drinking these days, man?
You know, our local brewery at Platte Park Brewing, I know you've been there.
Yeah, it's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. They've got called Platmosphere, which is a New England IPA that I don't think it quite rivals
the local brewery over here.
Juicy gummy, right? But yeah. But it's not far off, and I think you owe me a six pack. So I'm waiting to see that. Come pick up on that when travel changes. What are you drinking? What are you guys drinking? I know you're in a great beer environment.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to go Noon Whistle a lot, or Maplewood. I like their Son of Juice, or like the Goose Island. I like, they've got some good just straight ahead IPAs that I like a lot.
Right.
Plus, I like the guys over there a lot, and they give us good prices on beer.
Yeah. That's good.
We're in the craft brewing district.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good, good prices is a good thing.
Yeah. Anything else? So where can people find you, man? Are you teaching it all these days, or what are you doing?
That's a good, I mean, not really, you know, as we still have our NOR, neuroorthopedic rehab, that has been, we're working on that getting recorded all sessions. I think session one still isn't, but that'll soon be available, I think. And otherwise, no. I mean, with travel and things, it's just, we're not.
Days.
So I know. But the website is. I mean,
it
people can
good.
Find me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, thank
Studholm.
You.
What is it called again? You have
it's drstudholm.com or Denver runningsolutions.com. They point to the same same place, but we tried to make it more reflective of what we do and not so much. So back to your point, Jessica, you don't go on and think, oh, this guy's a chiropractor. Here's a list of everything he treats, mm-hmm. but instead let us show you what it looks like.
Standard chiropractic website yeah. that's everyone has yeah. that they use the same template. Yeah. No, yours looks good.
Very I think good video.
Appreciate it.
Well produced. Yeah. Yep.
That client actually is going to climb Everest.
Holy cow.
Next. So we're actually, so it's kind of cool. He, and I know you need to go, but, or we need to wrap up, but he, interestingly enough, he's going to follow a guy who's doing a route that's never been done.
Wow.
And, so he bought a Moxie and, Sam has been doing all his programming and all of it's based on, you know, his tolerance and delivery to create basically as big of a tank as possible and as much utilization as possible. So
wow, really cool.
It's kind of a cool training opportunity. So as an aside, but he did a great job in his video. So thank you for that.
Yeah. This has been a lot of fun, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good to see you guys.
So official transition has occurred now.
Official handing of the baton.
So we've got a little bit about the Movement Guild podcast. We do have some good episodes coming up that we already have filmed, which is nice. Our inaugural episode, interestingly, is going to be Gary Gray. So that'll be the next episode out.
Awesome. We've got
a bunch of really good episodes already filmed, both yoga people and movement people and people that our first season is going to be people that have influenced the Movement Guild a little bit in our thought process mm-hmm. of like how nice. We try to do things. So it's good That's that cool. you're definitely thought enter into that. So this is our official first podcast.
Well, I'm excited for Jessica to step in. I think she'll do a better job and be more accountable than I was. That's great. Right.
This is great. Awesome. So, rate us, all that kind of stuff. You want, Nick, you want to take us out here for the last time?
No, dude, it's on you, man. Where do I
rate it? I don't know. Like it, share it, all that great stuff.
What's it called? Is it called? What's
the Movement Guild podcast?
Got it. And that's on iTunes and all that?
We'll all be on iTunes.
Is there a Facebook page?
We got to transition ours, so I'll talk to you off that line about
nice.
That.
Nice, yeah, cool. Awesome.
All right, Lady Jessica, anything else?
Yeah, give Laura our regards. Yeah,
absolutely.
Nola, she sends her love. Snuggle for us.
She is.
There we go. I knew it. Good. Hi, puppy.
All right, talk to you soon, man. Thanks again.
Guys.
This was fun.
Take care.
Bye, Nick.
Take care.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Bye.